Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you.
And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, where honestly, it's not crazy that I've lost my voice because realtors talk a lot, but some of the stuff that happens, y'all, you'd be amazed. And today, I'm super excited to have one of my fellow balloon heads, and if you're not a realtor, you might not know those are REMAX people. Her name is Katie. She's in Louisiana, which is next to Texas, but she's in Baton Rouge. And so, Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. I am excited to be here.
So give the people who are listening a little bit of background, what you do, where you're located, how long you've been doing it, those fun little tidbits.
Sure. I have been doing this for 11 years. I am in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is about an hour from New Orleans. We are the capital. And pretty much I do anything residential, buyers, sellers, relocation, just all that kind of stuff.
I like how you slipped in there that y'all were the capital. And that was the other half of that sentence was, and not New Orleans.
It's true. I mean, they're the bigger city, but we are, in fact, the capital.
What was that about? Speak softly and carry a big red stick?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
I've been wanting to say that, like, since you agreed to be on the podcast, so I was just wanting to get it in there right now.
Perfect timing.
Okay, so there's only two ground rules for the podcast, and you probably know these like my other listeners, but I'll still repeat. So no F-bombs, GDs, or see you next Tuesdays, because I'm allergic to the really hateful words. But the other salty ones, not a big deal. And if there are any guilty parties involved in your story, just don't use real names. You can make up a name or just call them something like X, but not triple X, because that's a different kind of story. So with that being said, you typed like four paragraphs, and honestly, I didn't even read it because I'm like, this has got to be something good, Katie. You have to be on the show. So tell your story.
Okay. So we had a very large flood here in August of 2016, and about 110,000 homes were affected. A large majority of those homes were not even in what's considered a flood hazard area. And so most of those affected people did not have flood insurance.
Okay, so just for perspective, 110,000 homes, that's bigger than most cities and towns that people live in. That many homes were affected by the water in like, as in they would have to have work done because of the amount of water that was in the area?
Right, correct. So we had about 30 inches of rain in 48 hours, and it was basically what they're calling a 1,000-year flood. Our metro area, so the Baton Rouge metro area, is over 1 million people, just that. So it's a good percentage of affected homeowners, a lot of them concentrated in the Livingston Parish area.
That's right, because if you don't do geography, you should also remember that Louisiana is the crazy state that has parishes instead of counties.
Right, exactly. So that can throw people off. I know when a salesman is calling me because they ask me if I want to buy leads in my county.
Mm-hmm. And you probably say something fun about that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A tenth. That's huge. It's affected.
Right.
You said before I interrupted you, because I wanted people to think about the scale of this, these are the people who do not have flood insurance.
A very large portion of them had no flood insurance. And even those property owners that had been there, like the seller I'm about to tell you about, they owned their homes outright and no longer carried flood insurance, even if they were in a flood hazard area.
Because, you know, honestly, if you're in an area that's never flooded, we see this all the time. People decide to save the money because they've never had a problem, even if they're in the flood zone.
Right, exactly. So we encountered a lot of elderly people who, you know, own their home, either had dropped their flood insurance at some point in the past, or just, you know, decided they've been there so long, 40, 50 years, no problem. So we were experiencing a lot of that. This particular seller, very sweet 78-year-old man, had purchased his home with his mother. He was single, never married, no children, about 24 years prior, and had lived there with his mother until she passed 10 years ago. You know, he owned his home outright. He did not have any insurance. He didn't plan to ever leave there unless it was
In a casket.
Going on to the next world. So he wasn't planning to go anywhere, but he got about 3 feet of water. So we really ran the gamut of a couple of inches all the way up to, you know, all the way to the ceiling where you see pictures, the ceiling, you know, sheetrock has fallen to the floor and the insulation has fallen out of the attic and pretty much total loss type situations.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
It's very hard to deal with. And we're still really dealing with it. You know, 7 months later, a lot of these folks are just trying to get together the money to put their houses back together. So he had basically gotten some volunteers, which we were very lucky to have people from all over the country come and gut these homes, because the sooner you do that, the more of your home you can save. So he had some volunteers gut his home. But although he was very sweet, he was a little bit ornery, and he would kick volunteers out of his house if he was in a mood. So he had the house gutted, but not treated for mold. And we're in a very humid climate, and that was August. So his house started to basically grow some mold, and it needed to be treated, but he sent those people away and decided, I'm not going to deal with this. And he continued to live in the home with some electricity, bless. But no heating, AC. You know, none of your normal, he had some running water, but not the whole house. And it was gutted and it was partially molding, I would say. So he was there until the winter came. And then at the first pretty good cold snap, he moved into a hotel. He had a small dog and they left. And this is kind of the point at which I had a current seller contact me and mention this fella who was friends of her mother and said, look, we've run into an investor that wants to buy his property. And as a side note, the market has been flooded with investors all over the country. They come probably in all sorts of areas when there's a natural disaster and try to pick up these properties at a great, great discount.
Are you serious? So, I had no idea there was a cottage industry of investors that capitalize on disasters.
Oh, yes, very much so. And, you know, we experience it a little bit more frequently with hurricanes and this type. But wow. they're flooding in. So they want to come and buy your, you know, pennies on the dollar, flooded and gutted house. They're going to put it back together, because when you lose 110 housing units, there's going to be a market for that. Not everyone's going to say, I don't want to buy this house. It flooded right. before. So they're coming in and they're putting these houses back together. Basically, this elderly fella had been approached by an investor who offered him $75,000 for his home, which was 2,500 square feet and on nearly 2 acres of land.
Actually, give me two numbers, Katie. Tell me what it's worth in its need and attention, and then what it would be worth if it was normal fixed up house.
Okay. If it had been fixed up on the piece of property he was on and maybe in an updated condition. So the house was built, you know, 40 years prior, but if it had been updated, probably in the neighborhood of $300,000.
Right. That's a massive difference.
Yeah. The land itself, so let's just say we discounted the home, the land itself was probably in the neighborhood of $150,000. And his home, I never saw it pre-flood, but it looked like he hadn't maintained it in 10 years.
Right.
It might not have had a big difference in value from pre-flood to post-flood, just because his land probably had more value than his house, quite honestly.
Okay.
So he was probably $150,000 is what I walked into it. You know, my seller asked me, look, we've got this friend. I'm concerned that he's getting, you know, kind of taken for a ride by this investor, and we'd like to know what his home is worth. I pulled up the comparable sales and got the report ready and sent it over to her. And I said, $150,000. I think that's fair. I think you're still going to sell it very quickly for that. And someone's going to come in and renovate this home. So she said, okay, that's what we thought. I'm going to let him know. We'd like you to come look at the property, which I agree to do. When I got there, he's very sweet. And he, you know, was very disturbed about the whole situation. And that was December. So he had several months to kind of take it all in and get used to his new normal. He was living in a hotel at the time, and he wanted to sell the house, but he just wanted to sell it to the investor. And basically, you know, his friends are looking out for him and saying, look, this is all the money that you have. There's no need to sell it to this guy for $75,000 when really your home is worth much more. So finally, you know, he walks me through the property. It was deep in the back quarter of 2 acres. So I had to take a good long walk over a rickety old bridge that had stopped working 5 years prior. So he would park his car at the front of the property and walk all the way back to his house, rain or shine, because you couldn't drive over this bridge anymore.
Maybe he was in a Fitbit challenge with some friends. You never do know.
he might have been. So I take the walk back to the back, and he walks me through the house, and he decides that he's going to let me list it. So we cover the market analysis. We look at the properties that have sold. I try and explain to him what his pre-flood value would have been, what his current value would have been. And this is where it gets a little sticky, because he just couldn't understand how his home was worth so much money. So he'd been there 24 years. He didn't keep up with values in the area, obviously. He just couldn't believe it. And now he's got this investor telling him your house is worth 75. I was able to talk him into listing it at 125, and that was begging. I wanted to list it at 150, and he just couldn't understand. He finally says, okay, I'll let you list it, but at 125. I'm like, okay, I've never had to fight with a seller about raising the price, but I did everything I could to get him to what it should have been.
Wow.
Yeah. So we decide on 125. This is December 22nd when we list it. So, you know, maybe we'd be in a slow time for Christmas. And he gave me a 1 month listing because he wasn't sure that this was going to work out. And he wanted to go ahead and get his FEMA trailer if it wasn't going to work out. FEMA was providing to homeowners in the area trailers that they would bring to your property and allow you to live in for up to a year and a half while you made the flood repairs. In his case, he was having some trouble getting through the red tape of getting his FEMA trailer there, which is how he ended up in the hotel. And he truly believed that he wasn't getting his FEMA trailer because he had dodged the Vietnam draft.
Oh, whoa. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different direction to go in.
Yeah, that was, sometimes you just, okay, nod and say yes. Well, I'm sorry. We'll try and figure it out for you. But that was what he thought. And so then I kind of, you know, he wanted someone to talk to, and I'm happy to listen. So we just kind of carried on in that way. But we get it on the market for $125. He is not believing anyone's going to even pay that. In 2 days, we have multiple offers. Which I wasn't surprised by, one of which was cash, and it was for $125. So I bring it to him, and he says, okay, well, you know, I guess this is fine. I mean, are you sure they're really going to buy the house like this? I'm like, yes, you know, yes, sir, they are. Okay. So we've got it. We're under contract. We're going to close pretty quick. I mean, it's cash. We're going to close mid-January. We kind of go through the process. I go to open the door for the inspection because this fella's, the buyer's agent was out of town. So I go to open the door, and he mentions, I've lived in this house before. Now, my seller had been there 24 years. And this buyer said, as a child, he had lived there and kind of had fond memories of the property and was happy to see it available and was, you know, thinking of renovating it and moving his family in now that he was, you know, grown with his own family, which I thought was kind of cool. So he does his inspection, everything goes fine, and he's ready to move on and make the purchase. And we get to the day before closing, and I go over to pick up my lockbox and my sign, and I run into Mr. Seller there walking his dog, and he says, is this really going to happen? You know, I don't believe that this is really going to happen. I'm like, yes, of course. This guy's got cash. We've already got proof of funds. Closing's tomorrow. All's well. He's like, okay, I'm just so sad, you know, that I'm having to leave the house. And, you know, I said, I understand. He said, do you have a camera? And I said, well, I have my phone. It takes decent photos. He said, okay, well, will you come into the house with me and take some pictures? This is not a man who had email or any other type of electronic communication. I believe he might have received a text on his phone, but I'm not even sure about that. So I went in with him, and he wanted to take photos of all the rooms of his house in its gutted condition. I mean, this is not, you know, oh, I want to remember my home this way, but it was the only thing he had left. So we went through and we took all the photos, and I was seeing that he was a little bit emotional about selling the property. And so as we walked out, I thought, oh, I'll offer a little tidbit of information that might make him feel a little bit happier about the sale. And I said, you know, I wanted to tell you, the buyer used to live in your home, and he's excited about purchasing the house for his family and fixing it up. And he said, well, wait a minute, he used to live here? I said, well, yes, sometime before you. I don't know if it was the first owner or the second, but, you know, he lived there before you. Oh, no. I just couldn't figure out why that would be a problem. And he says, well, you know, when we bought this house 24 years ago, it was listed for $150, and we got a deal on it. We got it for $105. And I bet this guy is just trying to get one back on me because we got such a good deal on this house.
Wait. What?
He thought that this guy, this is what he says, is not going to show up to closing tomorrow because he's trying to like stick it to me after I got this good deal on his house 24 years ago.
When this guy was probably the kid in the house.
Right. I'm like, I don't think that he's been waiting 24 years to stick it to you, but I mean, I don't even know how to make you feel better about this. I'm certain that we're going to close. Let's just kind of get on till tomorrow and see what we can do. And so sure enough, we go to closing the next day and this buyer is not able to close at the same time. So he has come the afternoon before. So I'm certain we're done. Buyer has already come. He's closed. He's signed. He provided his check and we've got all the money. So the seller, he fills it all out and he signs. He's like, okay, so we're really done? And we're like, yeah, he really bought your house. Oh, I really thought he wasn't going to show up. I'm like, no, he's already done his part and we're all done. And you can move on. And he's like, oh, okay, well, great. I mean, he's happy about it relatively. And I decided to, since he didn't have any form of electronic communication, provide all the photos I took on my cell phone to him. I just printed a big one and stuck them all in a book together. And he went on his merry way.
So, I mean, there's so many things that... that happened in the course of you telling this story. And all right, so I even had to write them down while you were talking because usually I can pick out like the one or two moments, but for real, girl, this is crazy. So let's look first of all at the fact that I'm totally flabbergasted by the fact that there are these little vulture investors that swoop in to neighborhoods that are in distress and disaster. And so I consider myself a fairly well-educated realtor. If I didn't know that mess was out there, then the consumer probably doesn't either. So,
right.
Again, this is the one of those reasons that you don't even think about that you should always call a professional realtor. Because if I had family in Baton Rouge and they called me because I'm in real estate in North Carolina and asked me questions, I would never have had any functionable idea that that's going on. So this is why, y'all. I mean, if you're a consumer listening to this, this is why you don't want your cousin who's 3 hours away to represent you if you're buying or selling something just because they're in the area or may even have a license. You got to have somebody that knows the community. Because look at what this investor did to your client. He wormed his way into his confidences. And I kind of imagine he had slick back hair because I just kind of feel like this would be a slick haired person. And he weaseled his way in and made this old man like him and scared him somehow and told him nobody else would buy that house. And this man, as you already said, he didn't have anything but that house.
That's right. That's all. And we're talking about a $50,000 swing. And it could have been more if only he would have let me list it for what I wanted to.
I want to go kick that investor in the throat. I'm not going to lie about it. I mean, I've been pretty obvious about that I'm trying to be a nicer person and quit cussing and stuff, except I can still say shit because it's my podcast. But the fact that this investor did this to an old man, I want to kick him in the throat. I'm just going to tell you. But this is also absolutely why you call a local expert. And it's also why you don't, if you're a consumer listening to this, this is why you don't really want to call a part-time realtor. And if you're a part-time realtor listening to this and you just got your feelings hurt, dude, you got to commit to this because Katie knows all this stuff because she's completely committed to her community and to her craft. I mean, this is not a game. And people who think real estate is a game could really hurt somebody like our poor old man here who did not have the ability to send a text back, which I think should frighten most young people because they don't understand the world without text. So, and then the other thing I think was striking to me here is there are many realtors out there who make lots of assumptions about their clients and their future clients, and they assume that their client already is up to speed on the market and on pricing and on how things work. And as you explained, your gentleman had not been paying attention to the real estate market because why would he? He's going to stay there till he dies. And so he couldn't get his mind wrapped around how the market had changed in that time frame. So you are awesome because you educated this man, even though he wasn't listening. You did everything you could do to bring him into today. And that's another reason consumers need an educated realtor who's patient enough to walk you through what's going on and not just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, sign here. Because, I mean, honestly, Katie, how many realtors would have gone ahead and listed it for $75 just because they knew it would sell fast?
Oh, yeah, plenty. Yeah, I couldn't sleep with myself that way.
Right, because you're a good person. You have integrity, and that's why your business thrives. And then let's see, what else did I notice here? Oh, the flood certification and the areas that do and don't have flood insurance. This is a huge legislative issue this year for realtors because mm-hmm. our flood insurance program is up for reauthorization in September. And so as a consumer, you might not realize that realtors do a ton of political work to protect situations against stuff like this happening, because even though some of the homeowners did have flood insurance, if Congress doesn't reauthorize the program, they would be in just as much trouble as somebody who doesn't know they're in a flooding area. So if you're a realtor, please contact me about getting engaged to help own this battle to reauthorize flood insurance. If you're a consumer, make sure that you're using a realtor who's aware of what's happening in the political arena and who's fighting for you, because this is one of our jobs as realtors. It's not just to sell your house. It's to protect all these things that affect your house, like flood certification. And then the last thing I love to see about your story here is so classic, because how many times, Katie, have you had a seller or a buyer ask you, oh, are we good? Are we done now? When they're halfway through the contract process? Because, you know, right. inspections are right. done. You know, right. Are we good? Yeah. We can't ever say it's 100% good.
No, my number one pet peeve is when someone posts, you know, a seller posts their listing on Facebook and they say, I listed my house today. And then the next day they post, I sold my house. And I said, well, that's definitely not the case.
Although if it really did happen that way, you probably took a bath on the price.
Right. I mean, we've all had a seller or buyer or someone pass away during a transaction. We've had, you know, every type of obstacle you can imagine that doesn't get you to the closing table. And I don't understand, agents allow their sellers to feel comfort until they've signed all the papers at the closing.
That's the most important thing any seller, I think, can take away from this is, no, do not be comfortable, because you don't know if the buyers used to live in the house and have a vendetta against the seller for getting a good deal 24 years prior. We just don't
know
right.
that.
It's That's not in
right.
our disclosure documents. But, you know, truly, it's even the best realtors with the best experience in the world have no way of anticipating all of the little weird frayed wires that can happen at the last minute. So
exactly.
we give you our best advice, consumers, but, you know, we can't control everything. Our job is to say, all right, you did cross this hurdle. We're getting closer, and we'll keep you in the loop and keep communicating with you. But you really shouldn't blame your realtor if something goes sideways that is out of their control, because this is the craziest thing in the world that we deal with large financial instruments and we can't control anything. So the last thing I'll point out here is that it's very obvious to me, and I think to the rest of the world, that if they have a need for an amazing professional realtor in Baton Rouge, they probably should go ahead and call Katie. So Katie, how can people reach you if they're a realtor who needs to connect you to somebody that they know and love in Baton Rouge, or if they're in Baton Rouge listening to this and are ready to talk to the best, how can they reach you?
Yes, absolutely. You can reach me, Katie Caldwell. My phone number is 225-241-4113. I do text. If you would rather email, it's katy.remax@gmail.com. And you can visit my website. It's moveMOVEBR.com.
And it sounds like you even have the ability to deal with people who do not understand technology, so you might even hand deliver a contract or a package if you had to.
I just might, depending on the situation.
I will include all of Katie's contact information in the show notes for this episode. So if you're out driving around, or if you were sweating to the oldies and you didn't have your ink pen nearby, never fear. Go into the notes, contact Katie for all your Baton Rouge needs. Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us so many different angles to consider. And honestly, I'm going to go do some research on these vulture investors, because that really bothers me on a big level. But thank you for being on the show. You're awesome. I'm very proud to have you in the industry.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
And if you're listening to this, you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or a consumer who's got your own story of something crazy that's happened in real estate, send me a message on Twitter or any of the social networks, and I can feature you on a future episode. In the meantime, subscribe for more, and we'll see you next time on Crazy Shit in Real Estate.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit crazyshitinrealestate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.